From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In Israel's latest election results, incumbent Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have fallen short of the number of seats that he needs to maintain power. He would now need to form a coalition with the Arab Islamist Ram Party in order to remain prime minister. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders has put out an urgent call for Palestinians to receive more vaccines. Mr. Netanyahu marched swiftly to vaccinate Israeli citizens, ostensibly in an election-related bid to gain popularity, and only allowed a very small number to be given to Palestinian territories. Joining me to discuss all of this is Ariel Gold, National Co-Director of Code Pink. She manages the organization's campaigns for Palestinian rights. Welcome to the program, Ariel.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So first, is it surprising that Netanyahu has not received the number of seats, his party has not received the number of seats necessary for an outright majority? This is something like the fourth election in 2 years, and he has, you know, been seemingly untouchable in spite of serious charges of bribery and corruption.
This seems to be the new norm for Israel. Ongoing continuous elections. It's quite likely that they will go to fifth elections this year, possibly in a matter of months. And possibly it could go on like this for quite a long time. Netanyahu is a shrewd politician, but he has also created a number of enemies. So one of the reasons that he isn't able to form a coalition is not because there are not enough right-wing parties or right-wing politicians who have won seats in Knesset in this and the previous elections. In fact, there are enough right-wingers, right-wing parties and seats in Knesset to make a strong right-wing fascist government. But because some of them are enemies of Netanyahu, they are campaigning against him. And quite interestingly, this election certainly it wasn't about Palestinian rights, as no elections in so long have been. It actually, exit polls showed that people actually didn't vote on what type of job Netanyahu did in vaccinations and the coronavirus pandemic. This election was really simply a pro-Netanyahu and an anti-Netanyahu. Will Netanyahu stay in power or won't he? And the side for won't he was a kind of a motley mess of parties that are to the right of Netanyahu, as well as what they call center-left parties, but I would really call them center-right parties. Israel's politics are just so far right wing at this point, and then a small number of actually leftist liberal parties. And then on the other side, on Netanyahu's side, we had a mix of the religious right, which has become a real issue among the right there, whether the religious, the Orthodox Haredi Jews will continue to be exempt from military service and to receive the benefits that Netanyahu has gathered for them, and an alignment with what are not even the far right, but are the racist right. They're referred to the Kahanists, which are quite simply the equivalent of the Jewish KKK, as well as a virulently anti-LGBTQ+ government. And this is who Netanyahu has welcomed in. It would be the equivalent. I mean, we saw Trump appoint so many horrible people, but it would be the equivalent as if Trump had appointed a leader of the actual KKK.
Wow.
And given them a position in the administration. That is actually what Netanyahu did in his attempt this time to win the election. Now, he didn't get enough votes he may or may not form a coalition. Well, I can describe what sort of those factors would be. But even if he doesn't form a coalition, as long as that motley mess of those who oppose him, but are not necessarily ideologically connected, can't form a coalition. And it doesn't seem like very likely that they'll be able to, then he remains the caretaker of the government. So he remains prime minister and we go back to elections. So in an odd way, you know, he lost, but he stays in power.
Wow. And he poured so much of his effort and expended his political energy in vaccinating Israel faster than perhaps any nation on the planet, making it the envy of the world. Israel alone, of course, and not the Palestinian territory. So he had seemingly put the, put a lot of effort into this as an election ploy. And as you mentioned, it didn't seem to actually have played a role. Instead, in the days leading up to the election, there were thousands and thousands of Israelis that were gathered outside his residence, protesting, presumably safely gathering outside because many of them had been vaccinated thanks to him. What were the reasons behind that grassroots opposition, or at least seemingly grassroots opposition among Israelis to Netanyahu?
To my knowledge, it really is a grassroots opposition. It really is a rising up, and it's been going on for over a year now. And actually, it's been going on for many years, but these weekly protests have been going on for over a year, these massive, massive protests. And they are part of the anti-Netanyahu group. And this actually is the left. Now, when we say the left there, that's a mix of leftists who are not for Palestinian rights. Often you have the left, but it doesn't welcome in Palestinian citizens of Israel or Palestinians who want to end Israel's apartheid system. In this case, they have found a bit of a home in that protest movement. They do exist. It's a very small group of people, but they're outraged that this corrupt leader who has been indicted and is facing trial for bribery charges continues to lead the country. And they really, really want him out. Unfortunately, like I said, they really don't have the numbers or the cohesion to come together, because in terms of the election, when we look at the anti-Netanyahu bloc, that includes people like Gideon Saar of the New Hope Party, who's actually to the right of Netanyahu. He just wants to be in power instead of Netanyahu. And we have other players like that as well. We have the party that is, to again, like equally right wing like Netanyahu, but is secular, and so doesn't want the Orthodox to get the vote. And so those that are actually leaning towards progressive issues, whether domestic or including Palestinian rights, that's actually quite a small group. And Netanyahu, like I said, he's a very shrewd politician. So, you know, there was a bloc that did come together last time, the Blue and White Party with Benny Gantz. But he got Benny Gantz to take a gamble and joining with him for a supposed rotation government. And we see how that worked out. And Benny Gantz is pretty much done for as a politician now.
Wow. So we'll be possibly having you back on in a few months to talk about yet another election. We'll see. Let's turn to the situation with Palestinians, where, of course, you have basically the world's largest refugee situation. And we've seen small numbers, a few tens of thousands of vaccines being allowed into Palestinian territory. Some other countries have donated. But how severe is the pandemic in the Palestinian territories, in the West Bank, in Gaza right now?
Well, in Gaza, we want to keep in mind that the majority of the country, I believe it's about 80%, is dependent on aid, is dependent on humanitarian aid for subsistence. This is a country with an over 50% unemployment rate for youth, where electricity is not on 24 hours a day, where a large amount of the drinking water is contaminated. So hygiene and social distancing and appropriate medical care is near impossible in Gaza. So the pandemic there is really unabated. It's a very horrific situation. In the West Bank, it's spreading rapidly. And I just want to speak a little bit about Israel, their method with this, because it is so grotesque that sometimes it wakes me up in the middle of the night. Oh, this is so disgusting. So first, Israel, like you said, Netanyahu launched this aggressive vaccination campaign inside Israel's legal borders and refused to vaccinate Palestinians in the West Bank, claiming that he had no obligation, which is blatantly false. But so finally, after enough pressure, Israel said, all right, we'll vaccinate some Palestinians. But listen to who they chose to vaccinate. And this is what just is so grotesque. Unlike the vaccine rollout inside Israel, the vaccine rollout in the US, in Europe, where you begin with the most vulnerable and first line healthcare workers, essential workers, etc., the elderly, that is not who Israel began with in the West Bank. Why would they? They began with those Palestinians who work inside settlements or work inside Israel proper.
So those who Israel is dependent on, basically, for services.
Or who could expose Israelis, who could expose Jews. It's the most racist conception of a system that I could imagine, and really just revolting. Like you said, thankfully, we have seen other countries stepping up, and some vaccines are getting in finally, but it's too late. And Israel, shame on them.
So what is needed? I mean, what are some of the things that, say, the United States can do? We know that the U.S. is heading toward a surplus of vaccines. The U.S. is party to COVAX, which is that international body where the World Health Organization, I believe, is coordinating vaccine donations from mostly wealthier nations for distribution to other nations. Are you seeing that as a potential way forward?
So the U.S. has said that they will be sending vaccines, and that's great. But what the U.S. really needs to do is they really need to live up to, the Biden administration needs to live up to the words that it says that foreign policy, that U.S. foreign policy under the Biden administration is going to be based on human rights. Because we have not seen that at all in terms of Israel and Palestine. Instead, we have seen the Biden administration continue to give Israel cover. We have seen them refuse to lift sanctions on the ICC and to back Israel's false claims that it's being unfairly targeted by the ICC. We need the Biden administration to actually impose consequences for ongoing settlement building, to condition military aid upon that, to demand that Israel halt its settlement enterprise, and to condemn Israel for its vaccine apartheid, for practicing medical apartheid. And if folks want to go to Code Pink's website, we have a petition to Dr. Fauci calling on him to speak out and call on Israel to meet its humanitarian obligations to vaccinate Palestinians. And the reason that we're calling on Fauci is that he just received an award for Israel for his incredible work, which has been very incredible, as a doctor, and as the award said, for speaking truth to power. And so we would like to see him speak truth to power in this case. And that petition is at codepink.org/Fauci.
That's codepink.org/Fauci. We'll post a link to that from our website. Following up from what you were saying with what Code Pink would like for the Biden administration to do with Israel in order to hold it accountable, what is the major difference, if any, that you see between Trump and Biden on Israel? Trump, of course, pushed the U.S.-Israeli relationship to a whole different level. Netanyahu knew this, was very aware of how much more pro-Israel one could get under a Trump administration, notwithstanding the fact that, of course, Trump also unleashed actual anti-Semitism in the country, as opposed to the kind that is used to label people like yourself who speak about Palestinian rights, but actual anti-Semitism, people who are racist against Jews. But Netanyahu seemed to overlook that. He was very happy about his relationship with Trump and happy about the U.S. embassy being moved to Jerusalem. Is Biden taking any steps to distinguish himself from Trump on the issue of Israel?
Basically, Biden has gone back to business as usual. Trump was pro-Israel.
I mean, and does that mean gone back to the Obama years, which, you know, even...
Well, Obama wasn't so fantastic. U.S. military assistance to Israel increased under President Obama. At the end of his term, he increased U.S. aid to Israel from $3.1 billion a year to $3.8 billion a year. He did... have some criticism of Israel. So far, Biden is kind of a slight bit below Obama, I would say, a little bit worse, but not significantly. He has reinstituted USAID to the Palestinians. He's doing some very small things, but that's where I mean it's kind of business as usual. He's not the friend of Israel that Trump was. An example of this would be that during the election, Netanyahu, usually at the very end of his election campaign, will tout his foreign policy creds. And under Trump, that included a visit to the U.S., you know, a picture with Trump right before the election, look how close I am to him. And he didn't even consider doing that with Biden. So that's one of those small differences that you see. Instead, he tried to do it with the UAE because of the normalization deal and the UAE.
Which was supposed to be Trump's shining foreign policy achievement.
Yes. But other than that, you know, Biden is really doing nothing on this issue. And it's a shame because there is a lot that he could do in terms of condemning settlements, in terms of actually putting some... real roadblocks in Israel's way, saying that we actually will condition military aid in terms of speaking out and telling Israel that they do have an obligation to vaccinate Palestinians, in terms of staying out of the way of the International Criminal Court and letting them do their job, supporting whatever the court is doing. So there are some very simple things, and we hope that Biden will have an awakening and start to do these, but not so far.
Let's talk about the ICC, because that's a really interesting story. It's important on the international level, hasn't gotten very much attention here in the United States. The ICC has launched an investigation into Israel's conduct in the Palestinian territories, perhaps a few decades late, but nonetheless has done, I think, something that, of course, on an objective level, and courts such as the ICC ought to have been doing all along. What has the U.S.'s response really been on this, and how far has this case gotten?
The U.S.'s response has been incredibly shameful. The ICC announced recently that it will be moving forward with the investigation against Israel for war crimes, as well as against Hamas for war crimes.
And of course, unsurprisingly, Netanyahu immediately called the International Court and its move the essence of anti-Semitism and hypocrisy.
Which, in this moment where real genuine anti-Semitism is spiking and Jews are in real danger, this puts Jews in much further danger because it is a false accusation of anti-Semitism, which confuses real anti-Semitism with advocacy for Palestinian rights. So the U.S., rather than deferring to the court, rather than recognizing the court's legitimacy, backed up Netanyahu, called the whole thing unfair, pledged to support Israel, and has refused to remove the sanctions that the Trump administration had placed on individuals in the ICC, preventing them from travel to the U.S. and access to some of their funds. So, you know, when I say that this is sort of a return to normal, the Biden administration has not rolled back all of the pro-Israel or pro-Israel on steroids things that the Trump administration did. Now, with the U.S. and the International Criminal Court, we need to keep in mind that the U.S. is at risk of being investigated for war crimes in Afghanistan. So they have additional motivations for delegitimizing the court. This court case, while monumental, because Palestinians were able to bring it, and because Israel tried to silence them by saying that Palestinians didn't have jurisdiction, or that the court didn't have jurisdiction because Palestine isn't a state, and that was found to be not true, and the court announced they were moving forward. So all of these things are monumental, but more so. In tension than in reality. In reality, this court case is going to take many, many years. And we know that the Palestinian situation is urgent and that the cause needs change now. So it's up to us as activists, as advocates, to push our leaders and to push from a grassroots perspective for real change for Palestinian rights.
And speaking of investigations, what I'd mentioned at the beginning of our conversation was that Benjamin Netanyahu himself, of course, faces these very serious bribery and corruption charges. What is the status of that? I mean, he was in such serious legal trouble that there was a point when it seemed that he might simply not even be qualified to be prime minister anymore because of these indictments.
Well, many people, and many of those people protesting outside his residence, believe that he is not qualified because of these corruption charges to be continuing as prime minister. Of course, as we see, he's continuing on. This is one of the reasons that Netanyahu is so intent on finally winning one of these elections and being able to form a government, because he would like to ensure immunity for himself and stop this court case from moving forward. So far, that hasn't happened. But let's keep in mind that this court case, while important and significant, it's for bribery, is not getting at the real heart of the most horrific things that Netanyahu has done, which is the oppression and, in many cases, murder of the Palestinian people, of maintaining an apartheid system, of welcoming fascists into his government, those who are so significantly racist that they were banned from Israel's Knesset and were on the U.S. terror list. These are the things that I really want to see Netanyahu held accountable for. In the meantime, I will settle for this corruption case.
Ariel, give out that website again for where people can get the petition around Dr. Fauci, as well as just find out about Code Pink's work.
Absolutely. So that's codepink.org. And the petition for Fauci is codepink.org/Fauci. You can also follow us on Twitter at Code Pink and on Instagram at Code Pink Action.
Thank you so much, Ariel, for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
My guest has been Ariel Gold, National Co-Director of Code Pink, and she manages the organization's campaigns for Palestinian rights. We've been discussing the results of the latest Israeli elections and the pandemic challenges facing Palestinians, among other things. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.